This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
it brings together very high-level political will for elephant conservation. Because it is a presidential-led initiative, it brings together heads of state, ministers from Africa to speak about elephant conservation.
That's Dr. Winnie Kiru, technical advisor for the Elephant Protection Initiative. We'll have full details on this story coming up.
Also, Nikki Haley resigns as President Trump's UN ambassador, and the World Bank says Kenya has made modest but sustained progress in reducing poverty over the last decade.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Authorities in Cameroon are appealing for calm. This after hundreds of youths marched through the streets of Yaoundé, celebrating what they called the victory of their candidate, Maurice Kamtos, in Sunday's presidential polls. No results have been released yet from the election in which eight candidates challenged longtime President Paul Biya. Moki Edwin Kinziga has more from Yaoundé.
Hundreds of young people demonstrating in the streets of the capital sing songs urging President Paul Biya to step down. They sing that they believe their candidate, Maurice Kamto, of the Cameroon Renaissance Movement Party, won Sunday's presidential election. The demonstration began after Kamto declared victory in the polls without giving any election results. The ruling Cameroon People's Democratic Movement organized a news briefing that was broadcast live on state TV to counter the declaration made by Kamto. Party Central Committee Secretary General Jean Kwete said Kamto exploited the naivety of the youths and sent them into the streets in an effort to win power at all costs. Kwete accused Kamto of breaking the law by announcing that he won the election.
We expressed our surprise, our indignation and worry in the face of such irresponsible declarations that have no foundation. They are doing this in a bid to cause an uprising of the population to defend an imaginary victory.
Kamto is not the only candidate claiming victory. Cabral Libi of the Opposition Universe Party announced he is leading the vote count. Opposition candidate Gaga Haman of the Alliance for Democracy and Development says two candidates want to create social unrest to oust President Paul Biya, who has led Cameroon for 36 years.
Both two candidates are in hurry to go to Etudi. Not yet, my dear friends. Not yet. Let us wait for the decision of Constitutional Council. There is no reason to go on the street. Don't exploit the mentality of youth.
Cameroon's electoral code states election results are proclaimed by the Constitutional Council 15 days after the polls. It forbids the early publication of results. Government spokesman Issa Chiruma says sanctions are being prepared for Kamto, Libi and anyone who takes it upon himself to publish results.
There is a threat. A threat at home. It is unwise to describe the measures which are already taken and which will be implemented in case any need be. But I invite you as a citizen and lover of your nation to stand against this horrible statement. Measures will be taken. What are they? Well, by the efficiency, you will notice that they are already taken.
Sunday's poll was marred by low turnout, especially in the English-speaking northwest and southwest regions, where armed separatists fighting for independence had vowed the polls will not take place. Despite the turmoil, Biya, one of Africa's longest-serving leaders, is expected to win in the face of a deeply divided opposition. Moki Edwin Kinziga, For VOA News, Yaounde.
The U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, today announced she would resign at the end of the year. President Donald Trump praised her work at the UN and in the administration. Haley said she was proud of her work and that now the U.S. is respected internationally. She thanked the president and his family for their support. She did not say what she planned to do next. VOA's White House correspondent, Patsy Wuda-Kusuwara, spoke with our colleague, Kate Pound-Dawson, about the surprise announcement.
Well, what we know is that that was a very effusive send-off from the president, and this is very different from the usual cabinet member leaving his or her post. President Trump spoke very highly of Ambassador Haley, and he did say that, you know, she mentioned 6 months ago that she was thinking about taking some time off, and basically we don't really know much about the resignation other than what was said today at the press conference, which is, she's staying until the end of the year, and also that she is leaving not just for personal reason because her family is supportive of her, but she just said, and I quote, I know that when it's time to step aside, and she also wants to make sure that this administration has the best person to fight this fight at the United Nations. So we don't really know what that means. The other thing that she mentioned was that she believes in term limits, and she's also saying that she is not running in 2020 as a presidential candidate. Now, we know that as journalists, whenever a politician says that they're not running, it just makes us want to watch them more because they always say that they're not running until they do. President Trump said that he will appoint a new successor in 2 or 3 weeks. Again, there's already so much speculation on that person as well.
What was her role in setting foreign policy as the UN ambassador?
Well, Nikki Haley is certainly someone that is very trusted in Trump's circle, and she's also widely regarded as one of the strongest members of the president's foreign policy team. And I do recall that when she accepted the job as UN ambassador, she requested specifically to President Trump that she will be involved in policy and decision-making process, and he did grant her that request. But we also have to remember that she's a very early and frequent critic of Trump on issues like racism, on the Muslim ban. We have to remember that she's a daughter of an immigrant herself, and that background may perhaps affect her worldview. And during her one and a half years on the job, she has repeatedly spoken her mind, in some cases quite against the president's policies himself.
Now, Ambassador Haley has visited Africa and was involved in a number of issues concerning the continent. Was her stance on Africa seen as being different than that of the White House?
I would say that her stance on Africa is different from the White House in the sense that it is more nuanced. The general perception is that the Trump White House does not put a lot of emphasis on Africa, does not see Africa beyond the lenses of countering China's influence or helping in the fight against terrorism or humanitarian aid, which President Trump has proposed to cut. I think Ambassador Haley saw Africa as much more than this, as we can see from her op-ed before departing on her 2017 African trip, where she argued that the U.S. interests in Africa are not just humanitarian, but also economic and strategic. You would recall that Haley visited Ethiopia, South Sudan, and the DRC in 2017 to review U.S.-supported UN peacekeeping missions there, assess conflict resolution in South Sudan, and also delayed elections in the DRC. And she delivered a very strong message to the leaders of South Sudan and the DRC that the U.S. would hold them accountable for their actions. So the general consensus on Africa is that she redeemed previous gaffes or previous missteps from Trump and the administration on Africa. Her stance is definitely more nuanced. I think she was able to translate a lot of the policy that was not very much well articulated from the White House on the UN on Africa.
That was White House correspondent Patsy Wuda-Kusuwara speaking with Kate Pound-Dawson.
The World Bank says Kenya has made modest but sustained progress in reducing poverty over the last decade. Its latest report says the share of the population living below the poverty line fell from 46.8% in 2005-06 to 36.1% in 2015-16. From Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
The international lender says progress came mainly in rural areas, where poverty levels declined from 50% to 38%. Urban poverty incidence remained unchanged. Felipe Jaramillo is the World Bank Kenya Country Director.
Kenya's annual GDP growth rate has averaged 5.3%. This is a number significantly above the average for sub-Saharan Africa, which is only 4.9%. And one of the truly important facts of this period has been the remarkable expansion of telecommunications and mobile financial services, which has shifted Kenya's economic paradigm to an extent and with a speed rarely seen in developing countries.
Poverty reduction in Kenya is low when compared with other countries in the sub-Saharan Africa region, but not when compared with low-middle-income countries worldwide. The senior World Bank official says consumption has grown significantly among households in the bottom 40% of the distribution, and particularly among the poorest of the poor.
At the same time, Kenya has successfully recovered and weathered from some strong shocks. The outbreak of political violence in 2007, the 2008 global financial crisis, and the very harsh drought that struck the Horn of Africa in 2011, which was then aggravated by rising global oil prices.
However, economists warned that the East African largest economy is falling short as it is not on track to eradicate extreme poverty by 2030. Carolina Menja Mantila is an economist at the World Bank and a lead author of the report.
The difference between the poverty rate in urban areas is basically no different from what it was before. That has resulted in an urbanization of poverty. The number of urban poor increased by 1.5 million, from 2.3 million to 3.8 million in 10 years. Nonetheless, the majority of the poor, almost 80%, still live in rural areas, so we must not forget about policies and actions to help those people in rural areas be out of poverty.
She said inequality is rising in urban areas. Within Nairobi, poverty is highly concentrated in informal settlements where living conditions are far worse than those in similar settlements in other major African cities. Nearly a third of the residents in informal settlements in the Kenyan capital are poor, compared to just 9% of the population living outside those areas. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
The death toll from the Ebola outbreak in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo keeps rising, mostly in the city of Beni. That follows several days when health workers suspended activities due to a period of mourning and protests after an armed group advanced into the heart of the city and killed 21 people. The World Health Organization reports at least 115 people have died since the first case was reported 2 months ago. Five deaths occurred Sunday, the highest single-day total so far. WHO says there are another 181 confirmed or probable cases. The DRC Health Ministry says some of the deaths include infected people who resisted treatment amid misinformation. The North Kivu provincial governor and nine provincial lawmakers have been vaccinated against the disease to prove the vaccine is safe. People also have resisted safe burial practices to replace traditional rituals in which survivors touch the body of the deceased. The health ministry says administrative measures will be imposed to enforce compliance.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wahib. 20 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Authorities in Cameroon are appealing for calm as the results of the presidential election is being tabulated. Nikki Haley resigns as Trump's UN ambassador. And the World Bank says Kenya has made modest but sustained progress in reducing poverty over the last decade. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
African women conservationists across the continent are taking the lead to protect elephants. Through the Elephant Protection Initiative, also known as EPI, women from various African countries are working together to reduce the plummeting populations of elephants despite their differing political and social environments. While inspiring a new generation of conservationists, these women are pushing for the implementation of the National Elephant Action Plans, drawn up by African governments to protect their elephant populations. The initiative will be a major player at the Illegal Wildlife Trafficking Conference taking place in London, October 11th and 12th. Dr. Winnie Kiru is the technical advisor for the EPI. She spoke with me about the importance of this initiative.
It brings together very high-level political will for elephant conservation. Because it is a presidential-led initiative, it brings together heads of state ministers from Africa to speak about elephant conservation. The second thing why it's important is that from 4 years ago when it was started, it has been able to grow from 5 countries to 19 countries. And these countries represent the largest elephant populations in Africa. So we have Kenya, we have Botswana, we have Tanzania in the initiative. These are all countries that have very large elephant populations. So when you bring together that kind of power in an initiative, political power, I think that what you're saying is that you can make a difference. That's what the EPI hopes to do.
Why have women taken on this type of challenge?
I would say that in the conservation world now, there are many women that have risen through the ranks from policy and advocacy level. I'm talking about from ministerial level, technical advisory level, boots on the ground, you know, women in security services. And the reason, I think, is just the realization that wildlife, our wildlife resource, is everybody's business. Everybody has just to have hands on deck. It is not culturally easy for women in Africa to get involved in the field of conservation because by nature, conservation takes you away from home. Conservation puts you in dangerous situations in the field. Conservation puts you at the table with a large percentage of men. And for your voice to be heard, you have to really be strong. And so it is really moving away from the cultural construct of the African woman. Why do we do this? Because we have to, because we must. We recognize that our voice must be heard as far as conservation in Africa is concerned.
What progress are you making in getting the National Elephant Action Plans implemented?
National Elephant Action Plans are very, very important in Africa. It's been a long journey from when we first thought about this National Elephant Action Plans, because it's really 8 years ago that Africa came together and thought we need an action plan for Africa's elephants. It took a long time for the countries to get together because they lacked a vehicle. They lacked a forum where they could focus clearly on the National Elephant Action Plan. When the Elephant Protection Initiative came to be, it became a pillar of the EPI to ensure that countries develop National Elephant Action Plans. We have worked slowly with members of the Elephant Protection Initiative, and we are happy to say that during this London conference, we have a package of 7 complete National Elephant Plans. By complete, we mean an action plan with an implementation plan and a resource mobilization plan fully budgeted to the extent that any donor can pick up that document, pick up priority projects, and be clear what their spend is. It's important because it brings the whole thought around elephant conservation in one document.
You are there at the Wildlife Trafficking Conference in London. So what are the expectations regarding putting elephant protection as a main priority there?
The Elephant Protection Initiative was launched 4 years ago at the Illegal Wildlife Trade Conference that was held in London. The EPI was launched by 5 presidents. Now we have 19 heads of state and their ministers that have signed this initiative. A good number of them will be present at this conference. We expect that when this kind of political will combined with our global friends who are also going to be in the conference, donors that have historically supported elephant protection, we expect that when they see how Africa has come together and the power they've put behind elephant conservation, that this is going to result in resources that we badly need to implement these plans.
That was Dr. Winnie Kiru. She's the technical advisor for the Elephant Protective Initiative. She spoke with me from London.
Today, Uganda celebrates 56 years of independence. In his speech to mark the occasion, President Yoweri Museveni touted some of his government's achievements in building infrastructure and pushing economic growth. He also said greater law enforcement is needed, blaming crime on terrorists. He said those who criticize the country are jealous of its success. However, many in Uganda say Museveni, who has been in office 32 years, increasingly is trying to shut down critics and the political opposition. Lawmaker Robert Chagulani, popularly known as Bobby Wine, is among them. He told VOA yesterday, "There's really nothing to celebrate because Ugandans are fighting the same battles that their forefathers fought to gain independence from Great Britain." Bobby Wine says Ugandans under 32 years of Museveni rule have been marginalized in their own country. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, Glenn Hollis, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
This is our moment. We are speaking out to end malaria.
This is DJ Drogba. Malaria is preventable and treatable.
Sleep under an insecticide-treated mosquito net every night. Go to a health center at the first sign of fever for testing and appropriate treatment.
Join me. United, we can beat malaria.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
This is Shauna Renee, the lady DJ and host of Soul Lounge. Every Sunday at 1400 UTC, I choose an artist that you and I love, and we break down their entire career while listening to their biggest hits. That's what we do here on the Soul Lounge. Once again, every Sunday, 1400 UTC, right here.